KPZW News Time is 8:06. Well, it's snowing outside here in Sweet Alley, and I'm interested in what we're likely to see this weekend. On the phone, we have Cedric Haynes with ABC4. Cedric, are we going to get some more snow this weekend?
That's a great question. The answer to that one is no, but we will see some snow showers off and on this afternoon. But, you know, we're in this kind of wacky up-and-down weather pattern. So, yes, we've got those snow showers this morning that will slowly fade as we go throughout the day. The majority of the big accumulating snow is pretty much over with now, and this will be wrapping up as we go throughout the next few hours. Temperatures, though, will stay on the chilly side today. We'll see those highs only in the low 30s out there in Park City and highs only in the mid to upper 30s for the Heber Valley. So below average, and again, just not going to be a warm day. It'll be a more of a winter-like day, but that changes as we go into the weekend. Now, with that being said, I will also tell you Saturday morning will be a frigid start as we drop back down into the low to mid-teens in the Heber Valley and mid to upper teens for Park City. But don't let that fool you. We're going to have a lot of sunshine as we go throughout this weekend, including your Saturday afternoon, and that'll boost those high temperatures close to the 40-degree mark in Park City and highs in the mid-40s there in the Heber Valley. But it gets even warmer as we go into your Sunday. Again, another frigid start with teens to kick off the day, but we climb close to the upper 40s to around 50 in Park City for your Sunday afternoon, and highs will climb into the 50s as we get into the Heber Valley. So as you can see, with temperatures in the 50s, the chances of snow as we go throughout the weekend very slim, but also it's just going to be dry as well. Now we kick off next week on Monday with dry conditions. We'll start off in the low to mid 20s for overnight lows, but we'll see our highs back into the upper 40s to near 50 again in Park City, with highs in the mid-50s for the Heber Valley. And we'll start to see those clouds on the increase as we go into your Monday night. So we'll call it mostly cloudy skies for us as we get into our Tuesday. Again, we kick off the day with temperatures in the upper 20s in both Park City and the Heber Valley. But as we get into the afternoon, we'll see those daytime highs back into the mid to upper 40s across the area. And as we go throughout the day, the clouds will continue to thicken up on Tuesday. And we could see a couple of scattered rain or snow showers kind of mixed in coming through as we get into your Wednesday and into Wednesday night. It's not going to be a big deal, but it'll be storm system number one of what will be another two-parter hitting us as we go into next week. And then the second and more main storm system arrives as we get towards next Thursday into Friday. And that one will be very similar to the one we just dealt with another atmospheric river looking to be on target to move into the area. So that means that we're likely to be seeing snow throughout the entire event there in the Park City area, with a rain changing the snow event there in the Heber Valley. But again, could be talking about more healthy totals out there with that atmospheric river, meaning quite a bit of water content coming into the Beehive State by the end of next week. So we're going to be dealing with the last of this system wrapping up this morning, and then a beautiful weekend, but don't get used to it because winter returns again next week.
You know, Cedric, it sounds like it's going to be awfully warm next week during several of those days, and then we're going to end up with what sounds to be another like a wet, heavy snowstorm at the end of the week.
So
are we like turning to spring already? I mean, you know, looking a little bit further out, are we going to finally get some more of that good cold, you know, powdery stuff that we like to ski on so much?
That's a great question. Well, as of now, it looks like it's definitely going to be more of the wet, heavy snow kind of content that we're seeing here lately, because we're going to be dealing with a lot of ups and downs. So those temperatures warm up, then they come down, and it's more of that wet snow. But it does add a lot of water content to the ground. Just not great for skiing, as you mentioned.
All right, Cedric. Uh-huh. Thanks so much.
No problem.
You have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you.
And now let's see what this wet, heavy snow has done to conditions in the backcountry. Good morning, Greg, with Utah Avalanche Center.
Yeah, good morning. It has been a snowy week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, some places in the Salt Lake and Park City Mountains have received 2 to nearly 4 feet of snow since Monday. And yeah, a lot of the snow has been wet and heavy, but the snowfall overnight has actually been cold. The flow switched to the northwest, north-northwest overnight. So the 3 to 6 inches that were reported overnight, it's all this low density stuff. And that's good news, because we're going with a considerable avalanche danger today at the mid and upper elevations. Considerable means human triggered avalanches are likely. So we've had a lot of snow, we've had some wind drifting, and so human triggered avalanches are likely. The good news is this low density snow means that you can get on lower angled slopes. You don't have to get into avalanche terrain to enjoy this snow. You know, we're still talking a little bit about our persistent weak layer. I think we're getting close to putting this to bed, I think. Fingers crossed. Cross your fingers, everyone out there, please. But, you know, we're still a little unsure as well. So everyone I talk to, and certainly the way I'm traveling, is I'm continuing to avoid steep upper elevation, mid and upper elevation, northerly slopes. I just don't trust them. And all the snow this past week has given us plenty of other options. So let's give it a little bit more time. Let's see how the snowpack reacts to this huge amount of snow that we've had this past week. Yeah, and then going into the weekend, we're looking, things are going to change. So today's going to be more winter-like, and then it's going to be warm and sunny this weekend. So you just heard cold starts, but strong sunshine, so I'm expecting some wet avalanche activity by Saturday and Sunday. So please pay attention to changing conditions as we transition from today to sunny weather over the weekend.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Hey, question for you. Earlier today, I know that there was some avalanche mitigation activity going on in Little Cottonwood Canyon, and the road was closed. Do you have any information about what's going on there and when people will be able to get up?
You know, I'm hearing a closure till about 8:30, but, you know, they never know. You know, they have a scheduled closure. Mm-hmm. They never know. They have an amazing crew that does snow safety work for Little Cottonwood Canyon. And right now I'm hearing like 8:30, 9 a.m. would be when they're expecting to get it open. So, you know, we're not looking at a lot of heavy snowfall today, so I do expect that road will get open and probably get open fairly quickly, I think. But you know, they will only open it when they have the highest confidence that travelers going up the canyon are safe.
Okay, thanks, Greg, and have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Roger Goldman. Coming up, we're going to be chatting with Park City Ice Miners Director of Hockey Operations, Mike Adamek, about the Park City Red Hockey Team Championship. Then we'll be speaking with Renee Pinckney, she's the president of the Utah Education Association, about their plans to organize a ballot referendum. And we're going to finish our hour by speaking with Sarah Irvin about this week's pledge drive. Stay tuned. Well, the Park City Ice Miners hockey team won the state championship Monday night. Here to talk about it is Coach Mike Adamek. Good morning, Mike. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Mike, for those who aren't all that familiar with how this works, how does the Hockey State High School Championship competition work?
So it was a double elimination tournament. There was an affiliated and an independent division. So we are part of the affiliated because it's all one school that plays for our team. Mm-hmm. There is other teams in the state that have multiple schools that comprise their team. That would be the independent division. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
Unaffiliated division. And so, Mike,
yes.
And about how many high school teams participate in the tournament?
So in our division, there was, I believe it was an eight-team tournament. There was also a consolation, if you will, mm-hmm. Tournament as well. There's approximately, I'd say, 40 teams in Utah.
And now, just when we talk about affiliation, is this technically a Park City High School team? I mean, you know, again, you think of the traditional sort of, you know, the football and basketball teams are all part of the school. What exactly is the relationship between the high school and your organization?
So we're a club.
You're a club.
A club sport. So,
okay.
Yes. There is not, you know, any affiliation, to be honest, with the school, with our program, other than then all of our players go to Park City High School, mm-hmm. And we're a club that is operated outside the school.
Okay, so you mentioned that it's a double elimination tournament. Can you just recap for us the miners' path to victory? Who did you have to beat?
To be honest, I don't know if this was set told you guys, but actually the Ice Miners or the Miners went undefeated this year, 21-0.
Wow.
So, yeah, we had a 17-0 regular season, and then our path to the state championship was we played Mountain Ridge, and then actually the other Park City High School varsity team, and then we beat Brighton twice.
Okay, so this is a club sport, and you mentioned there are something like 40 teams around the state. You guys played 17 game regular season games. How much travel is involved, and how are you able to sort of, you know, pay for it? How is the team financed?
So the team is financed by the players. We also do some fundraising. For instance, last Monday, the Park City Brewery was super awesome and gave us a portion of their sales for the day. Hockey is an expensive sport.
Yes.
Thankfully, by playing, believe it or not, in-state and, you know, traveling locally, it saves our parents a lot of money throughout the West, there's lots of states that, you know, the parents and kids have to travel 2 or 3 hours just to get a game in. Thankfully, we have, you know, a cool little league set up for the state, and it's a lot more affordable than it could be in other places.
Now, are a lot of the teams in the greater Salt Lake area, sort of the 50 to 75 yeah. miles radius around us? Yeah. Okay. So it means it's a sane bus ride. What were some of the outstanding performances from that team this year? Who were some of the outstanding players?
Honestly, we had 11 seniors this year. I would hate a single, you know, mm-hmm. one or two out, because our team was just an incredible team together. We had some guys that played a little bit more than others that, you know, had a little bit more of a role scoring wise. But I think every single player, every single senior helped lead our team, and the underclassmen did a really good job of being led. Our team, obviously, when it's a high school program, the kids know each other from some of them since they were 3 or 4 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's a really close group. They play for each other. They play to win. They don't really necessarily care about, you know, who gets the accolades. And that's why it's been such a special group. And obviously, Cooper Ford, Will Bach, they've two of our seniors, Jonesy Reese, another senior, that's had kind of a lot of success with scoring. But we've also had, you know, some guys step up and play big roles defensively. We only gave up 24 goals in 21 games all season. So,
wow.
Yeah. Honestly, it was a completely dominant team, and it was a lot of fun to be a part of.
So you got 11 seniors. I imagine one of the things about high school sports is the cupboard empties itself out fairly often. That's a lot of players for you to have to replace next year.
Yes, it is. And I think there's a lot of kids that are on our team currently, maybe some 9th and 10th graders that aren't on our team already, that are looking forward to trying to fill those big shoes, you know?
Yep.
Park City's won 4 out of the last 5 state championships, so, you know, our kids are expected to win. So I think our guys will step up to the occasion, you know?
Now, they
have no choice.
Going back to the 11 seniors, are any of them looking to play collegiate hockey, and how does the recruiting in that world work?
Yeah, so for college hockey, there's a few steps, even for, you know, the highest blue-chip recruits between high school and college hockey. It's what's called junior hockey. So a player would go and play juniors, which is kids up to the age of 20. They're all trying to get their scholarship. Like I say, college hockey is a much older sport, a lot of 20 and 21-year-old freshmen. So we don't have any kids going directly from Park City High School to any of our colleges this next year, but I have 2 or 3 kids that will continue to try and play junior hockey after high school.
Okay. So you've won the state championship. Where do things go from here? Is there some kind of organized next level of competition on a national basis?
Yes, there is. USA Hockey runs a national tournament for high school hockey. There's 2 divisions. There's I believe it's Division I and then Division II. Division I would be, you know, your prep schools, your higher populated hockey states. We will be in the Division II pool, so we'll play some of the less populated hockey states just to make it a little bit more fair, if you will. I mean, we're not going to play the state champion from
Minnesota.
Massachusetts. Yeah, or Minnesota. Yeah. It wouldn't be fun for the state champion from Minnesota or Massachusetts to play us, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how many teams are in this division, and how will that progress?
It's a 16-team tournament for us. We will get a 3-game round robin. Obviously, the top eight teams from there will move on to the quarterfinals. We set 3 goals at the beginning of the year. We've reached 2 of them, and the 3rd one is to try and get to that quarterfinal at Nationals. We've never done it. So, you know, big goals.
And where will you guys go? Do you know where you're going to go next and who you're going to be playing against?
We have not got our schedule for Nationals yet, but we are going to Irvine, California, March 26th through 30th.
Okay.
End of the month.
Okay. So, I want to talk a little bit about how the high school team fits into the overall structure of the programs you run at Park City Ice Miners. Well, talk to us a little bit about sort of the other programs or the overall program.
Yeah, so our youth program is pretty awesome. It's a big program. We have kids from about 5 years old to 16 years old that play for our club program. Our high school team and club is a separate entity, but it's all the same, you know, players, if you will. We have the same parent group, the same a lot of the same volunteers. So they're very closely intertwined. But that doesn't mean that you have to play Park City club hockey to play Park City high school hockey. We had last season, we had 80 kids in our under eight program, up from 40 the year before. So hockey's growing in Utah for sure, and especially here in Summit County and Park City. Every single player on our high school team, the state championship team, played for the Ice Miners Club at one point, and most of them for most of their lives. It's, you know, a good youth program that has recreational level all the way up to, you know, the AA Tier 2 highest level in the state teams. And it provides a pretty awesome place for our kids, boys and girls, to play hockey close to home with, you know, some awesome coaches. We have a lot of our coaches play are transplants from other areas, you know, that played hockey in Michigan or Minnesota or Canada. So it's an awesome program. I've been doing it now for 11 years and seen it grow exponentially, especially here in the last year or two.
And do you sort of, are you involved in sort of at some level in coaching all of those teams or the overall supervision of all those teams?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I kind of help run the teams and then, you know, help pick the coaches, make sure everything's running smoothly. I also coach our 10 and under team. I'm actually driving my son right now to his 12U game in Provo. So we got state title or state championships going on for the little kids now. He's got a 12U state championship game against West Valley.
Well, I'm sure he's well coached. You mentioned the girls teams. Talk to us about like at what level do you have, you know, girls to women programs?
So we currently in Park City do not have girls only teams yet. Okay. We're hoping to get there. Right now our girls are playing on co-ed teams. That usually goes up until they're about 13 or 14 years old when body checking is introduced to the sport. Girls choose to play girls hockey so that their body contact is going of the same size. But girls are allowed to play with boys up until we've had girls on the high school team. So we're hoping in the future, in the near future, to have maybe an 8U or a 10U girls-only team. Currently, we probably have 15 to 20 girls playing in our youth program.
Okay, anything else you want to touch on before we go?
No, I just wanted to thank you guys for having me on and also thank the Park City community. We had really awesome support throughout the season. Our kids really notice it when, you know, the stands are packed, and it's a lot more fun to play hockey when you're playing in front of your peers and your community. And I wanted to thank Park City for supporting us in that way.
Mike, good luck in California. We look forward to hearing how you guys do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
So Wasatch County is launching an investigation into allegations of retaliation and misconduct inside its sheriff's office. This news comes days after Sheriff Jared Rigby asked Cache County law enforcement to investigate the claims. KPCW's Christine Weller, has this report.
The Wednesday Wasatch County Council agenda originally included a discussion of public safety concerns. The item was added in response to multiple requests from former officers to investigate the sheriff's office. But the council abruptly pulled the discussion 2 hours before the meeting after learning Sheriff Jared Rigby asked the Cache County Sheriff's Office to review the former officers' concerns Monday. The change to the agenda, however, didn't stop community members from showing up, including some officers who recently quit the department and others who attended with resignation letters in hand. Among those who made public comments were retired Wasatch County Sheriff Todd Bonner and retired Sheriff Lieutenant Jeff Winterton, who met with council members last month. Winterton said he's concerned about transparency. Rigby has said he's conducting an investigation in response to allegations raised by a department lieutenant in February 2024. Its status is unclear.
I don't believe that our concerns have been heard. I'm very concerned with the so-called ongoing investigation. I have no idea what that is. and the fact that it was not the council that called for that investigation.
Bonner agreed.
I don't think that you guys have cared. I don't understand how a sheriff can call another sheriff in the state of Utah and request them to investigate when they don't even know what the allegations are yet.
In an interview with KPCW after the meeting, Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow said the county will start an external investigation to address civil concerns. He said the council also plans to hire a retired judge with no ties to the county to handle it.
We really feel a responsibility to take seriously any of these claims and accusations. And the concern is that not following proper procedure and protocol actually jeopardizes the impartiality and the participation of everyone involved.
He said citizens are invited to share their concerns in writing. Concerns about misconduct and retaliation inside Rigby's office first came to light in a letter sent to the council in January from an attorney for Lieutenant Shane Fredrickson. In a copy of the letter obtained by KPCW, Fredrickson said he filed a formal grievance about Undersheriff Josh Probst's conduct and actions during multiple high-profile cases. He also claimed his concerns were, quote, swept under the rug by Rigby and that he has been subject to retaliation for filing the complaint. Fredrickson was placed on administrative leave January 21st. At the time, the sheriff's office told KPCW it was Fredrickson who had behaved improperly and the office had no choice but to take disciplinary action. Bonner and Winterton said they took their concerns to the council after Fredrickson was placed on leave as part of what the sheriff's office called, quote, continuing progressive discipline for alleged misconduct. In Rigby's statement about referring the investigation to Cache County, he said the decision was driven by a lack of specific concerns from former members of the department. Rigby said he attempted to speak with them on February 12th. Graybow and three members of the county council also spoke with them on February 21st. Graybow said some of the accusations have been vague.
It's been difficult to pin down the nature of the accusations. I think that there is the potential for some of the accusations to be criminal in nature.
In a statement Thursday, Rigby said he, quote, welcomes and invites citizens' ideas and concerns, and the sheriff's office strives to be open and transparent in all of its interactions, investigations, and law enforcement actions. He said the office is, quote, committed to finding and correcting misconduct, if such exists, and will continue to be professional and fair in fulfilling its duties. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Earlier in this legislative session, the Utah legislature passed and Governor Cox signed HB 267, which effectively bans collective bargaining by public employees. In response, a group of labor unions is organizing to seek to put a referendum on the topic in front of Utah voters. Here to talk about it is Renee Pinckney, the president of the Utah Education Association, the largest teachers union in Utah. Good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me.
Can you flesh out a little bit? Have I explained what HB 267 does properly?
Yes, there are a lot of pieces to the law, but essentially what it is doing is taking away the ability of, in our case, the local school districts to recognize a bargaining agent and be able to negotiate for competitive compensation packages and other improvements in our working conditions.
And how did the proponents of the bill justify? What was the explanation for why this change in legislation was needed?
They argued that very few people, whether it's a local education association or law enforcement or fire, that very few people actually negotiate and have contracts that are signed, and that it wouldn't really impact very many people at all.
Okay, but in fact, let me follow up on that a little bit. What types of public employees in Utah are currently unionized, and how many employees, as you see it, are going to be affected by this sort of end the ability to engage in collective bargaining?
Well, for every negotiated contract, Everybody benefits, regardless of if they are members of the bargaining agent. And so what we are trying to do is to allow we the people to vote in a referendum to have a voice in this harmful legislation, because we know that we had a huge public outcry with all of the emails and text messages and phone calls and the rally that we held. We had over 1,000 people. We had a petition that had over 16,000 people sign it. And our legislators and our governor didn't listen to their constituents. So now we want to take it to the people.
And I want to get to that. But before we do, just can you share with our listeners a little bit about your perspective on why public workers should have the right to unionize and engage in collective bargaining?
Well, we know that holistically we need to protect public workers. And there were comments at the hearing in the House and the Senate having to do with making sure that working conditions are safe for all public workers, that when there are issues having to do with safety, or in our case, having to do with our working conditions, which are our students' learning conditions, that it benefits both parties in order to negotiate for changes that will make improvement.
Okay, you mentioned that you want to put this in front of the voters. Can you explain to us the process and what steps would be required in order to get this on the ballot?
Well, we have a timeline of 30 days from the first signature that we obtain on the petition. And we have 15 out of 29 districts that we will need to get the threshold for each district as far as the voters who are active, and there are percentages, and I don't know all of the ins and outs of that. And then we know that we will need to have some buffer Senate districts, and then we will have to make sure that we deliver all of the petition booklets to the various counties. And I believe that deadline is April 16th, and we intend to file on Saturday morning, first thing.
Okay, so just to give our listeners a sense of what it takes, because it's not that easy to get something put on the ballot. You mentioned that there's a complication. There's a total number of signatures, and there's a total number of a distribution element that has to be met across various districts. Just roughly, about how many total signatures are you going to need to obtain?
You know, the actual required number of valid signatures, we're just rounding up to 147,000. For a buffer, we're looking at well over 200,000.
And how are you organizing that effort? I mean, you mentioned you're going to start Saturday. My understanding is there was an effort to do it before the legislative session ended, and you were told you had to wait. And I take it that's why you say you're starting tomorrow, is because you're waiting for the session to end before you kick off the effort?
Exactly. And we have a coalition of labor union partners, and we have been organizing for weeks, and we have a plan in terms of having launch sites and having people who are located across the state where we can communicate with our volunteers, and every labor union who has joined with us will have their volunteers, and it's going to be a huge effort. But we are organized, and we will be analyzing data to make sure that we are, in fact, on target to reach all of the requirements in every Senate district, and we will prevail.
And can you share with us who some of the other unions that are partnering with you are?
Well, we have the Utah School Employees Association, the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Association. We have AFT and AFSCME and quite a few others, the Utah Public Employees Association. There's a list, mm-hmm. and I'm missing a few, but we have quite a few that have signed on with us.
And what will happen?
Oh,
go ahead. Sorry. What'd you leave out?
Sorry, the Teamsters. The Teamsters
don't
are
leave
also
out the
there.
Teamster. Don't want to leave out the Teamsters.
We don't want to leave out the Teamsters. No way.
Okay. So are we actually going to see, are Utah residents and people here in Summit County, are we going to be come up to the supermarket and see people out in front with little card tables? I mean, will this be a very visible effort to the public?
Yes, this will be an incredibly visible effort, and you will likely see me because I live up here. Mm-hmm. And we will obviously follow all of the laws in terms of where we can and cannot get signatures. But yes, you will definitely see us around.
So how does this work? What will happen to the law, assuming you get your signatures in by the April date, as you mentioned, and assuming that the Lieutenant Governor's office concludes that you've met your thresholds, what happens then? Does the law get suspended? How does it work?
So in terms of once we get our referendum in motion and we have qualified for the ballot, then we have a campaign. And that campaign will be dependent upon when the election is held. So it should be the general election in November of 2026. And then it will be put on the ballot for the voters to decide if they want to protect Utah workers and basically repeal HB 267.
I read something, and I may not have understood this properly, but is there some issue about what happens to the law once you've qualified for the petition, once the petition is qualified? Is the law suspended pending the referendum, or is the law in effect pending the referendum?
You know, that is a good question, and I am not sure about that.
Sure. Yeah, okay. All right. So you mentioned that there'll be a campaign. Given the sort of political climate we live in and the extent to which public employee unions are perceived by some as a hot button issue, would you expect us to get a lot of national attention and, you know, sort of groups coming in and trying to weigh in on this issue from outside the state?
So do you mean in terms of trying to, I know that there will likely be an organized effort to get names, people to withdraw their name. I believe that is likely to happen. As far as our campaign and moving forward, UEA has experienced this a year ago when we launched our campaign against Constitutional Amendment A, and we had that voided. So we are experienced in terms of running campaigns.
What I was really asking was whether or not we would anticipate funding groups being funded on both sides, but certainly on the opposition side. Is this the kind of issue that's likely to attract both local and national attention, given the sort of political?
I would imagine it would, because this is such a short timeline with so many requirements that we may get national attention based on our success.
Yep. Okay, anything else you want to add before we go?
No, I just want to thank you very much for having me on, and we would appreciate as many people signing our petition to protect Utah's workers.
Renee Pinckney, the president of the Utah Education Association, thanks for spending time with us this morning. Park City Mountain's Pioneer Lift is now open for the 24-25 season. The lift opened midway through the season on Wednesday after it broke during a preseason inspection. Park City Mountain spokesperson Emily McDonald told KPCW the resort's lift maintenance team regularly performs rigorous preseason inspections on all lifts. She said all of the terrain off the lift has been accessible via McConkie's or Thane's, but now the resort can officially say that all 41 of its lifts are open for the season. The Camas City Planning Commission has proposed an ordinance banning short-term rentals to the city council, but says it may be subject to change. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the city is watching Summit County and statewide regulations closely.
Planning Commissioner Cindy Butterfield called it a conundrum Tuesday, how to avoid government overreach while controlling the negative effects of nightly rentals such as Airbnbs or Vrbo's.
If I have to pick between saying, you know what, we can have 40 versus zero, my choice is zero. And I appreciate the conversation and the explanation that this is a good starting spot, that this is not set in stone.
All five commissioners voted for a ban, with the understanding that they may revise it after a Summit County subcommittee proposes similar regulations for unincorporated areas. Here's Camas Mayor Matt McCormick.
They haven't adopted theirs yet because it is so complicated. And I think what Amanda's doing and saying is put this in place while we work on something that we can live with but nobody seems to be able to put a rope around because it is so complicated.
The Camas City Council has the final say on the short-term rental ordinance. Planning commissioners expressed sympathy for those who rent out their homes on sites like Airbnb currently, but they point out that's not really allowed under city rules. Camas doesn't offer business licenses for short-term rentals, amounting to a de facto ban. It also means the city can't collect taxes on those rentals. City planner Amanda Curtis drafted the proposed ordinance in response to Utah House Bill 256. It would allow the city to use listings to enforce short-term rental regulations, provided staff had other evidence, such as neighbor complaints. But Curtis reads the law as applying only to cities or counties that already regulate short-term rentals. If HB 256 becomes law, she believes Camas would need a policy in place by May 7th, the same day it takes effect. She explained some of the criticisms of short-term rentals based on a study by Summit County's Housing and Economic Development Director.
Jeff Jones did a huge study into this, as I think I told you guys last time, and found that not only was it decreasing the amount of long-term rentals that were available, but it was hiking up the prices on houses for sale because it was a skewed market. So it was, you know, offering these homes at a price that was really only available to people that were looking for second homes that were doing something like this.
Or corporations. Commissioners were worried about the community character drying up if companies buy up homes just to rent them out short term. Another bill, House Bill 149, would have banned companies from doing that, but it never made it out of committee. HB 256, meanwhile, is expected to become law. It was back in the House for a final vote as of Thursday. The legislative session ends Friday. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
KPCW News time is now 8:45. Utah lawmakers are moving forward with a bill that would give city and county councils more power to settle land use disputes. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
Senate Bill 262 would allow local legislative bodies like city councils to settle litigation regarding any land use decision with a private property owner. The bill, approved by the House, states local governments could reach a settlement through a consent agreement. Approval from the local planning commission wouldn't be required. If passed, a property owner could attempt to reach an agreement with the city council after exhausting all administrative remedies instead of taking the case to court. Here's floor sponsor, Utah County Republican Stephen White.
What this essentially does is it allows elected city councils to make land use decisions and to be able to have that city council as the elected body to be the final say in the land use matter.
The Utah League of Cities and Towns is supportive of the bill. The proposed law could impact how Park City handles appeals of land use decisions, which have included many high-profile projects in recent years, like Park City Mountain's unsuccessful application to upgrade two lifts. The city council recently discussed changing the structure of the city's appeal authorities. Right now, three bodies handle appeals in Park City: the Planning Commission, the Board of Adjustment, and a separate appeals panel. Park City Municipal Spokesperson Clayton Scribner said the city is generally supportive of any law that maintains local land use authority. Scribner said Senate Bill 262, quote, appears to preserve local government's discretion in settling these matters at the local level. The bill passed in the House and was awaiting a vote in the Senate as of Thursday afternoon. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, the on-air phase of the KPCW's Winter Pledge Drive wrapped up yesterday afternoon, but we're not done yet. Here to talk about the drive, where we are so far, and what you can still do to help KPCW is our Director of Development, Sarah Irvin.
Good morning, Roger. Thanks for having me.
Morning, Sarah.
So, yes, as you mentioned, we wrapped up the on-air portion of our Winter Pledge Drive, which means today you're not going to hear us every hour telling you to dial and
435-649-9004.
You can dial. I will answer the phone today. I will happily take your pledge. But because we wrapped up the on-air portion doesn't mean you need to stop giving. We have not yet met our goal. This is the first time, actually, in a number of pledge cycles where we have fallen short. We are 84% of the way towards our goal. We have, you know, we've raised at this point $253,000 during our pledge cycle. Our goal is $300,000. And that's not just a made up number. That is because we have budgeted for that. We need to reach that goal because that's what helps us carry out our annual operations here. We have a news team full of, we have 8 full-time reporters and news producers. We have an expanded digital presence. We have launched new shows thanks to the support of this community, but in order to sustain those programs, in order to continue to provide all of our free services that our listeners and readers rely on, we really need to hear from you. And so if you have not yet had a chance to donate to KPCW, you still can and have it count towards our pledge drive goal. You can hop online at kpcw.org, click that donate button, and I have great news. You can still get thank you gifts when you give. Just because you missed your chance to call doesn't mean we don't want to give you a thank you gift for your donation to KPCW. So we have the ability online now for you to choose the type of gift that you would like to receive. We have,
are those still up? In other words, if I go online yes. right now, I can see what's still available.
Yes, you can. You can still actually not only see what's available in terms of the categories, but you can specify if you have a favorite restaurant that you want to gift card too. You can let us know. We do still have many thank you gifts left. We still have ski lift tickets to Deer Valley left. Those are popular this season. There's new snow coming our way. I think people are still planning to hit the slopes before the end of this winter season. And if you're planning to ski Deer Valley, or if you have friends coming into town who are planning to ski Deer Valley, it's a $200 donation to KPCW and you get a single day lift ticket. I also want to thank Deer Valley. They are a gold level sponsor of ours, as well as Park City Mountain through the Vail Epic Promise program, Summit Sotheby's as well, and Promontory Foundation. Thank you. Promontory Foundation, actually the sponsor of our new program, the Community Campfire. That's a new show we've launched coming up in just about 10 minutes time. And again, all of this is made possible thanks to community support.
And so let's talk about some of the highlights of this week. What were your favorite hours during the pledge drive?
Well, I don't want to pick favorites. We're so grateful to every nonprofit organization and every sponsor that came on air with us. But I have to say, I had the privilege and honor of being in studio with our friends over at Lucky Ones yesterday. I think that's always one of my favorite hours. The Park City Seniors as well, incredible energy that they bring. We had Sid Reed, Linda McReynolds, Liz Novak, and Rhonda Sedaris dancing up a storm in here yesterday. And if you haven't, again, had a chance to donate in honor of your favorite nonprofit hour, that is still online as well. So when you go to kpcw.org to make a donation, you'll go through the steps. You'll click from a drop down menu the hour you want your donation attributed to, so you can help them get free underwriting, and you can select if you would like us to send you a thank you gift.
So were there any sort of new participants this year that had a particularly effective hour?
Yeah, we did. Park City Sailing Club and Park City Soccer Club were both new participants with us. And, those are great local organizations that have incredible support from their families. They're great youth athletic organizations. And Park City Sailing, has adult sailing programs as well. We learned a lot about their summer offerings and the ways that you can support them all year long. Again, part of the benefit to these nonprofit organizations when they come on and help us fundraise. I mean, to be very clear, the money is coming to KPCW, but what they can get in return is up to 100 free spots of underwriting credit, which gives them that little bank of credit they can use throughout the year to promote their programs, whether it's upcoming registrations or scholarships, upcoming events. So it's really valuable to our nonprofit partners.
So I'm going to put you on the spot and see if you can answer, see if I can stump the expert here. Were there any nonprofits that came close to making the underwriting goal that could use just a little boost? And so if someone wants to sort of help somebody get over that hump, they could call in.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you asked that. Park City Soccer Club is one of them. Live Like Sam could use a boost. Let's see here. I think Lucky Ones also, thank you, Bill, could use a boost. If you're listening now and you're like, you know what, I forgot to give. I want to give to KPCW, and I love one of those organizations. Select that from the drop-down menu, or if you just write it in the comments and we'll make sure that they get credit.
And let's see. Do we have a celebration coming up with respect to the... I'm afraid we were going to get through this without talking about it.
We do. We have this evening... our first ever winter family-friendly free community event. It's called Skate Your Groove Thing. You've been hearing the theme song all week. And we want our community to come out and celebrate with us at the Park City Ice Arena in Quinns Junction. We will have free skate rentals for anyone who needs ice skates, myself included. And we will have food and hot cocoa for purchase, food from Super Cheesy, that's grilled sandwiches and hot soups, as well as hot cocoa and other drinks from our friends at Lucky Wentz, who have their brand new Sprinter to show off. We're calling it their camper, but it's really, it's not the tow-along camper anymore. They have a new Sprinter they're bringing. And again, we'll be at the Ice Arena tonight from 5 to 8 p.m. All ages encouraged, all skating abilities encouraged, costumes encouraged if you'd like to throw on some disco sparkles. And we'll have a great time out there. We hope to see everyone.
I take it the rumors that there is in fact going to be a community versus KPCW staff hockey match during the middle of this. I take it those are not in fact true.
I had not heard that, but anything's possible, I suppose. Everyone has to turn out and let's see what happens.
Okay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I should ask you about. Broadcasters Club memberships.
Yes, thanks for asking. So our Broadcasters Club is our major donor program. We have about 370 memberships around town. Memberships are good for two people. So right now we're looking at about 700 people who are in the Broadcasters Club. A lot of folks are up for their renewal this month. And if they haven't had a chance to renew their membership, we'd love to hear from you before Sunday. You can, again, call the station or do that online. You can call me, I should say.
I'll answer the phone this morning.
If you need to renew your Broadcasters Club. But if you haven't yet joined the Broadcasters Club and you've been thinking about it, memberships start at $1,000. That's $83 a month. Up from that, at a $1,500 level, at $125 a month, you get invited to all the Broadcasters Club receptions that we host in the spring, summer, and fall that every member gets invited to, plus three exclusive ski events that we host. We still have one left this year, and then, of course, the events next year. So if you've been thinking about joining, now's a great time. It is our major donor program. It's a way that folks can provide some sustaining support to the station that we can rely on throughout the year. And I want to make sure mention as well that, again, a gift of just $10 makes a difference. If you can donate $10 today to KPCW, could you consider donating $10 a month to KPCW? That's $120 a year. If that's what you can contribute because you rely on KPCW throughout the year for local news, traffic updates, weather updates, trails reports, the lost and found, $10 a month or $120 a year is something that we would absolutely encourage you to do. And you can do that online. You can set up a recurring donation on our new donation platform. So I'd say really think about what can you do to support KPCW? What's the value that you get out of this station, and how can you support us?
Okay, Sarah, thanks very much. I think you get a little break before you come back for the community campfire in a few minutes.
I'll see you in 8 minutes.
Okay. We'll be right back after this. Park City resident Katie Wright has served at the helm of Better Boundaries, which works to stop gerrymandering and protect the rights of voters to choose their elected officials, for the last 3 years. She stepped down from her position this week to take a full-time role with the Utah Donor Collaborative. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher has more.
Utahns for Responsive Government formed in 2017 as the launchpad for the Better Boundaries Initiative. Its purpose was to get a citizens' initiative on the 2018 ballot to establish an independent redistricting commission for drawing Utah's voting district maps. Proposition 4 was narrowly approved by 50% of the voters, but the Utah legislature later repealed it and made the independent commission only an advisory body. Lawmakers also undercut Prop 4's ban on gerrymandering and removed a requirement that a legislative boundary committee follow certain standards. In response, Better Boundaries transitioned from a temporary single-issue initiative organization to become a permanent citizen rights advocacy group. In 2021, Katie Wright stepped in to serve as director of Better Boundaries to raise the money to support the plaintiffs who had filed an anti-gerrymandering lawsuit challenging the legislature's changes. Last year, the Utah Supreme Court made two rulings in favor of the plaintiffs, Wright says they're still waiting for a resolution of the lawsuit.
On January 31st of this year, we had a hearing with the Third District Court, and there was a request from the plaintiffs, who are League of Women Voters Utah and Mormon Women for Ethical Government, for the court to rule that the maps violate our constitutional rights, that the repeal of Proposition 4, which the citizens passed, is unconstitutional, and to create a process to put a fair congressional map in place for 2026.
While Wright makes her departure as the state legislature wraps up this year, she says she remains concerned about some of the bills filed this year, what she calls more power grabs. She says lawmakers attempted to make it harder to launch citizen ballot initiatives and went after the independence of the judiciary in an attempt to amass power in the legislative branch.
And it doesn't really matter what your political background and beliefs are. That's dangerous. We have three branches of government because checks and balances are fundamental to a democracy. And I think that everyone should be concerned with this power grab in all different policies and forms.
For those who are also concerned, she says vocal, principled dissent can be effective to show elected representatives the public opposition. A group of protesters is meeting at the state capitol south steps on Monday at 5:30 p.m. to do that. Leslie Thatcher, KPCW News.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour. Coming up Monday on Mountain Money, we're going to have an interesting conversation with John Lechner, the author of a book called Death is Our Business, about the Wagner Group, a group of mercenaries operating out of Russia.